been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday. It is Thursday already. It is October the 23rd, and this is the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Jeff Webster today, our software guru and one of our vice presidents. We'll be getting to him here in a bit. Right now, we've got a little bit of a rally going on. I love it to start the day with a rally. I just hate it to wake up and the futures are down 900 points. I kind of want to go back to bed when that happens. But that's not happening today. The NASDAQ is up 112 points right now. That's a half a percent. That puts the NASDAQ at 22,831, bumping up against a little resistance there once again today at its all-time high that we set last week. S&P 500 up 13 to 6,712. The Dow is up 27 to 46,600 or thereabouts. The bond market is pretty quiet, 3.96. Gold continues to rebound after that sharp sell-off on Tuesday, I think it was. Gold is up 2.5% to 4,165. Oil's up 5% today on the new sanctions on Russian oil. And we have Bitcoin is up 1,200 right now to 109,534. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only firm, investment advisory firm. And I'm here with Jeff Webster, who's been giddy ever since Ohtani had that was that the best game by a single player in the history of baseball? Where are they ranking that one, Jeff?
I think it was an outstanding game, you know, pitching and hitting the three homers. You know, they compare it with this was certainly before my time, but Don Larsen's perfect game in the World Series, I think, in 1956.
But Don Larsen didn't hit three home runs during that game either, right? I mean, Ohtani not only hit the three home runs, but he pitched. A seven-inning shutout?
I think.
Ten strikeouts.
Yeah.
And on a trivia note, Don Larsen was from my high school, Point Loma High School in San Diego.
Really?
We also had another perfect game from a Point Loma pointer in David Wells with the Yankees. So the only perfect games in World Series and playoffs were from graduates of Point Loma High School. What are the odds of that? Ask an actuarial on those numbers and see what he says. Well, we have a pretty good start here to the market today. It was a little bit sloppy yesterday. It was a tough day for quantum, but there's news on quantum today. We'll get to that. The small nukes had a rough day, the robotics, crypto, the rare earth stocks selling off. Those are the nevermost parts of the market, I would say, and they fill up during times of speculation and greed, and they drain rather quickly. Those little tributaries when there's a little bit of nervousness in the market. And that's kind of what happened yesterday. Now, oil is a story yesterday and today. Trump announced that he's beginning to refill the strategic oil reserves. And late yesterday, I think he slapped sanctions on the two biggest oil companies in Russia. And anybody that does business with them, as the Cold War is back, it seems, and that is driving oil prices up 5%. And, of course, the standoff with China also is still intact, but there is optimism on that front. Now he's threatening to block software, important software. How important is American software in China, Jeff Webster? You would know the answer to that.
I think, I mean, it's certainly the largest market outside of the United States, and I think every company wants to figure out how they can get some type of a footprint there. But you've got to be able to navigate the various, you know, political customs, cultural issues and stuff like that to be successful there.
Yeah. Hey, my nephew sent me a little, my nephew, the PhD from Stanford and Harvard and all this and that, and the disruption guy, he sent me a little thing off of Instagram. Jensen Huang announcing that their market share in China has gone from whatever it was to zero. They have reached 0%. And that's one of the reasons why you've seen NVIDIA stock level off. I think it still has more upside potential, and in fact, quite a bit. And I do think that there will be a resolution to this whole China standoff. It almost seems like it comes down to rare earth on their side and the high-speed chips and software, throw in software on our side. And they will be meeting here and pretty soon before the end of the month. So I think next week. Trump face-to-face with Xi, and I know they're also in Malaysia talking Turkey there before Thanksgiving. And, you know, that's – but to go to a 0% share in China, I mean, Apple didn't face that. They obviously lost a lot of, you know, market share there, and Tesla has lost a lot of market share in China. But NVIDIA went to zero with the Blackwell chips. And as a result, you know, China also stopped buying, what is it, the H2O chips, which are a grade lower. And it's all part of the retaliation. It's all part of the positioning in the trade war. Jeff, do we own any of that ETF, the U.S. soybean Tikram ETF fund? I don't think so. We're not an investor in soybeans, right? But there are, you know, there's an ETF on almost everything now. I haven't seen football, you know, ETFs yet, gambling ETFs, but I'm sure that's out there somewhere. I mean, we've got single stock leveraged ETFs, which totally defeats the purpose of ETFs in the first place. But never mind that. But there are ETFs on soybeans. There's ETFs on wheat. There's the corn ETF. And, of course, you know, farmers can use those ETFs to hedge their crops. You can short those ETFs. You can go long those ETFs. Soybean futures tick up as Trump anticipates a China trade agreement. You know, one thing I've noticed with this second term of Trump, although he's still been guilty many times of these drastic headlines that, that upset the stock market quite drastically, have you seen him? He's toned things down. I'm going to give Bessent credit, who understands the markets and understands that you just don't go making these giant threats and having these 1,000-point sell-offs in the market. He seems to have struck a more optimistic tone this time around, that seems to have calmed the nerves of the market. You've seen the S&P rebound from 4,800 back in April when everything was draconian rhetoric coming out of the White House, and now things are more optimistic, toned down. And we're not seeing the dramatic sell-offs.
Maybe Melania or some of his advisors are giving him some subtle charm school tips on.
Yeah, tone things down, Donald. You know, DJT, you got to be careful what you say because the markets are hanging on every word out of your mouth and out of Jerome Powell's mouth. So
certainly,
take it easy, pal.
His sons, who are big investors out there, they probably call him up at the end of the day saying,
yeah.
Dad, why did you say that? Do you realize what it actually did to our net worth today?
Dad, did you know what that did to crypto today? I mean, come on. $38 trillion, okay? Bang, we topped that yesterday. This is the second longest government shutdown in history. We don't see really any hope. I mean, Kevin Hassett was saying by the end of this week we should have a solution, but that ain't happening. I mean, they're both dug in and nothing happening. And I would say this, nobody really seems to care that much unless you're a government worker expecting a paycheck next Tuesday. But we did hit that $38 trillion mark yesterday. I think maybe things have slowed down a bit as we continue to try to cut expenses. And the last thing we want to do is go back and add expenses back to the equation. And I think that's one of the big standoffs there with this government shutdown. Okay, when we come back, I want to talk quantum. And I'll let you, Jeff, you sent me a text last night, and it's true. There is news on the quantum front today. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. And what's that news on the quantum front there, Jeff?
Well, last night the Wall Street Journal reported that the U.S. government is considering taking equity stakes in exchange for federal funding with a number of these quantum players. A few were named: IonQ, Rigetti, D-Wave, and Quantum Computing.
Yes. Let's check in on those stocks and see how they're doing today. Let's see. QBTS up 19.2. Okay. All right. And we've got IonQ up 9.4%. Rigetti is up 11%. Those are probably the three main ones, in my opinion, just from watching these stocks. But I want, you know, our listeners to know that as I fly over Charleston and see the main bodies of water, and then I see all the branches coming off those main bodies of water, and then I see those little tiny little tributaries that only fill up during the highest of high tides, that's kind of where those quantum stocks are.
Bill. It's just like it's like going redfish. You know, you're fishing for those redfish, and
yes,
you hear, you know what, up this little tributary, there can be some big fish.
Yes, there can be.
But if you go in there, though, you have to be very, very vigilant, because if you're not watching yourself, you could find yourself stuck in the mud.
Yeah, high and dry.
And end up waiting. Exactly.
And, you know, the reason is because these stocks have very little. They absolutely do not have earnings, okay? In a lot of cases, they don't have any sales. I saw an article in the Financial Times. It was titled, let me see, I want to look that stock up. It was titled the $10 billion company, actually $18 billion company, without any sales. They don't even have a customer yet. And that was Oklo, all right? It's a nuclear stock way up that tributary. And when the money's flowing in the market, when the animal spirits are running high, that's when those little tributaries fill up. But having said that, too, also, Jeff, when the animal spirits, when there's a little upset in the market, let's just say that, for instance, there's a big long standoff with in the trade war. Well, you know what? Now that fear comes back, and those are the first areas of the market to drain. And you're left high and dry, and you got to wait till those areas fill up again. And maybe they never will fill up again. Maybe your boat will. I have seen stranded boats.
Highly speculative.
Yes, they're highly speculative. They're fun. I would say, you know, tough to invest in them for the long term. Although, you know, there are people that can have maybe 5% of their portfolio out there on the edge. But I don't even really put these stocks in my emerging growth portfolio. I kind of wait till they have growth and they have earnings before they enter there.
It's almost like you're a venture capitalist.
Really, yeah.
And the whole concept of the government being supportive of them, you know, is in the first Trump administration, you know, there were billions invested. President Biden,
he was investing in solar, right? The solar and wind stocks.
He had the CHIPS and Science Act that he authorized, you know, to help with a few of those. And then, of course, recently, you know, a group of bipartisan senators, you know, introduced a bill that would reauthorize, you know, what President Trump did in his first term. And of course, you know, Rigetti recently got a $5.8 million contract from the Air Force. You know, the Department of Energy is doing some collaboration with IonQ. Again, there's not recognized revenue yet. These are all just announced deals.
Yes.
And,
well, you know, this is a whole new
twist. There's no money coming in yet.
With the government, they're taking equity stakes. I mean, we're almost creating a sovereign wealth fund, which I think is a very good idea myself. I mean, investing in a lot of these rare earth and quantum stocks, and what else has he invested in recently? A few others. I think it's a good thing myself. This is a whole new twist. You know, we're not just giving them loans. We're taking in exchange for those loans, we're getting a stake, equity piece stock in those companies. Okay,
well,
I figured this.
That, if you jump into that space, keep your eyes and ears open. You've got to be very vigilant.
Yes.
And
I saw these stocks reeling, you know, here over the last several days. And I looked to see if there was an ETF out there yet. I asked Grok, is there an ETF that is inverse the quantum space? There is not. However, there are two of the stocks, IONQ and QBTS, that someone's come up with a single stock ETF that is inverse those two stocks. And obviously you're not doing well on them today.
There's an ion one I saw last night as well that is 2x short.
Yeah, I think it's IONZ is the symbol.
Yep.
But anyways, if you're on the other side of that trade, that's how you can play it. Okay, I always figured that the real story behind rare earth, not so much the EV, it's defense. And my suspicions were verified here today. Lockheed and Neocorp, that's NB, they're going to develop scandium-based defense technology. And when you see that IUM, such as scandium, which comes from, it's a Scandinavian, it was discovered in Scandinavia, they want to use it in modern fighter aircraft. So we're not out there trying to lock up rare earth to help the EV industry, which I don't think the Trump administration is all that bullish on the EV industry. It's defense and it's weaponry. And I don't think that China would be hoarding this stuff and making it so difficult if it was just for the EV industry. They understand that by them selling rare earth to us, we're using it in weaponry, advanced weaponry that we could use against them someday. So therein is why. But at the same time, you can say the same thing about NVIDIA chips, Jeff. China wants access to those NVIDIA chips, I'm sure, for defense reasons, putting that technology into missiles and all kinds of different things, fighter jets, naval ships that they're building, etc. So you've got they've got an advantage over us with the rare earth. We've got an advantage over them.
Is scandium replacing our rhodium? Is our favorite?
That's all I know is
now.
Rhodium is the most expensive rare earth.
That's
out
right.
There, right? I haven't bought any recently. Maybe I should be storing rhodium instead of gold and silver and scandium. You know, I got some scandium. It's here in my basement. You want some? Okay, we'll be right back. But I must do the wrong call. Hit us in a bad place.
And I wonder what it's good for. This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, the story of the day's got to be Tesla. It usually is, but especially when they report earnings. And we do not currently own Tesla. It's been pretty dicey as far as I'm concerned. The EV competition is here. China, obviously, is now a major competitor to Tesla. They kind of had the market to themselves for many years. And the appetite for EVs, especially in America, has dwindled. And for that reason, and there hasn't been any growth at Tesla, okay? I mean, look, their earnings are going to be down 25% this year versus last year. So that does
I think Elon Musk is going to start feeling a lot of pressure. You know, they reported, you know, good revenue, but their earnings were off. And
well, this is the first time in many quarters that they've had growth in sales. Their sales were finally up 12%.
Yep.
But the earnings were down 31%.
In the business world, when sales are down, the VPs of sales get fired, but when earnings are down, it's usually an expense-related issue, especially when revenue is up, and that's where you see some significant pressure on CEOs.
Yep.
And so I think they're going to say, look, Elon, you need to really start focusing on this business. I mean, he's out of Doge now for the most part, but he's fragmented. And he needs to get focused. And so I think you're going to start to see him take some measures that begin to reduce expenses so our earnings can fall in line with the revenue growth that they are, in fact, seeing.
Yeah, I just don't know that the demand is there like it was for Tesla. But having said that, okay, let's put it up. Let's look at the scorecard. Tesla is up at bat. I'm sitting there. I'm going to look at the scoreboard, see how they've done over the years. He has produced for investors over the last 10 years in Tesla 41% per year, okay? But you got to remember, half of those 10 years, he had very little competition, if any, and there was pretty heavy demand for Tesla. And let's not forget, there was a $7,500 incentive from the federal government subsidizing sales of EVs.
Tax breaks.
Yep, by previous administrations. And he was able to deliver 25% return, 41% over the last 10 years. However, that is starting to slow down now, okay? Over the last 5 years, it's 25% returns, which is still very respectable. The S&P has only delivered 19, and over the last 3 years, he's basically delivered what the S&P 500 has returned. Now, if we take a look at the valuation, and here's my problem. I've got in there, well, this is the consensus estimate from the analysts. this is way too optimistic, in my opinion. The consensus analyst opinion on 5-year growth of earnings, not sales, earnings, is 12% per year. I don't see that happen. I think it's more, you know, has it entered into GM's realm where it's 3 or 4%? Probably not, but I mean, high single digits, that's probably where he's at, maybe. And when you extrapolate where those earnings are right now and extrapolate that out at 8 or 9% and put a multiple on there, by the way, the forward P.E. ratio on Tesla is 180. Are investors going to continue to pay 180 times forward earnings with the very suspect growth rate going forward? I calculate 65% upside potential. You're taking a lot of risk for 65%. And I don't think, I think those numbers are way, way too optimistic.
I think, Bill, I think his growth strategy is going to be very focused on autonomous vehicles.
Yes.
And he's robotaxi. He's working hard to align with the autonomous players and the robotaxi companies, you know, Uber, you know, with the anticipation that they would look at purchasing large numbers for their fleets.
Well, and I see GM has got a new mission in life, and that's to produce, take the doors. Jim Morrison said, keep your eyes on the road and your hands upon the wheel. GM has got a little slogan going, don't keep your eyes on the road and take your hands off the wheel, because we're going to have a fully autonomous car here in the future. So he no longer, you know, is, and from people I talk to, they really don't trust the autonomous. You know, it's a subscription product. You got to pay for it. And those that try it, you know, and try to work on their laptop or eat lunch while the car's driving itself, yeah, they don't really feel that comfortable doing that. So I'm just not a Tesla. I'm not a fan. That makes me very unpopular in the Silicon Valley, right, where every other car is a Tesla, it would seem. And we drove right by the Tesla plant when we were there, and now it's building humanoid robots. That's another part of the Tesla equation. That's part of the Tesla company, I believe. But I just don't see the growth. I just think that, you could say, well, how can you bet against Elon Musk? Well, okay, I mean, you can say that, but over the last 5 years, the growth in earnings has been all over the map and very, very sloppy, to say the least. And you've got a P.E. ratio of 248 because it's Elon Musk. And it was the first to market. They dominated the market. Now they've got competition. So anyways, that's my thoughts on Tesla, which is now a $1.4 trillion company. $1.4 trillion company, now headquartered in Austin, Texas. Used to be headquartered in the Silicon Valley. Now let's see what the analyst. I'm sure that Wedbush still loves Tesla, and I'm sure Kathy Wood still has her $2,500 target price on it. But I'll just say that this market analyst, this chief investment officer, is not a fan of the stock at this point in time, and we do not have any position in it. Now, we do have some shares that people have transferred to us, right, that they don't want sold. If they don't listen to me and say, no, I want to keep my Tesla, or they might have a big capital gain. I'm not seeing a lot of that anymore, though, in Tesla.
Bill, I like Musk private companies. I mean, I like SpaceX. I like Starlink.
Yeah.
You know, of course, those are privately held at
and
this
his
point
Grok,
in time.
Now he's got the AI Grok, right? And
I see much bigger upside potential with those plays than Tesla right now, particularly with the, you know, Asian competition that he sees.
Well, even his comments, he said, while we face near-term uncertainty from shifting trade, tariff, and fiscal policy, we are focused on long-term growth and value creation. But he also warned, on near-term uncertainty ahead of acceleration of AI software and fleet-based profits. And you don't make as much money on a fleet of autonomous vehicles as you do on the single sales. Morgan Stanley's analyst Adam Jonas said the Tesla's numbers were in line enough to keep the consensus estimates roughly unchanged. But I just don't know how you can justify. Wells Fargo analyst has the firm at underweight in place due to the core business deteriorating, and with robo-taxi Optimus seen as taking longer to scale than anticipated. He also mentioned that little was said about the core business. Wedbush analyst Dan Ives, who's a perma bull on the stock, maintained his uber bullish stance. See?
Uber, Jeff? Being the operative word there.
Yes, Uber. Maybe that's a hint that they're going to team up with Uber. But he's always been a big optimist on Tesla, and he's going to remain a big optimist. Kathy Woods has not weighed in yet, but it is still her biggest holding. Let's see if she adjusts her $2,500 target price on a stock that is currently trading at $421. We'll be right back.
Golden Cage on a winter's day.
Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. We've got another quantum, but it is not a quantum stock. It's a battery stock, QuantumScape QS, which is making the solid-state batteries for the EVs. And, you know, I've seen some numbers where, if successful, those cars could have a range of 900 miles, which would be a bit of a game changer, obviously. I think that
would make... That's better than to take a guess.
Well, that would make EVs a lot more attractive to folks with that kind of range. And they are making progress on that. QuantumScape is up today. They reported a narrower loss than expected. They announced some new customers coming on board, and the stock is up 10.7% right now. It's an $8.4 billion company headquartered in San Jose, California, the epicenter of the tech world. Home to many of these stocks that we talk about here on a daily basis. So anyways, that's one to keep an eye on. That's another one out there in the never most part of the hinterlands of the market.
It's up one of the small tributaries there.
Absolutely. And maybe there's a big red fish laying up there. I don't know, but it's very, very speculative at the same time. Now, one that's in the main body of the ocean, right, that's been around for a long time, definitely worth bringing up here, is IBM. You know, my late brother-in-law, he worked for IBM like 40 years ago, Jeff, and I'm sure you know people that at yep. one time worked for IBM, which really has not kept up, I would say, and of course it's headquartered in Armonk, New York. You know, one time we went to a big center back there. The mutual funds used to sponsor trips and whatnot. And I believe it was in Armonk, New York, where IBM had a big campus where they mm-hmm. trained their people. And, I mean, it was like it was big and real nice rooms and a huge place where you had dinner and everything. And we stayed there. Had a good time, you know. But IBM, you know, look, their earnings were better than expected. Their sales were up 9% year over year. That's about the best quarter they've had in a long time. I do think they're scratching the edges of the AI. They've teamed up with a couple. I want to say IBM is on the Anthropic train, not the OpenAI and not Grok, but I think they've chosen Anthropic to team up with. But let's just take a look. The first thing I look at is, look, you're an old veteran player. You've been around a long time. You're 42 years old, right? And you're our designated hitter maybe at this point in your career, or we bring you off the bench from time to time. I don't even do that with IBM, to be honest with you. Let's see how IBM, and of course, they've had some fresh management put in there and trying to turn the ship. Can they do a GE-like turnaround? I don't know. Over the last 10 years, you've gotten 12.6% out of IBM, which is about half of the S&P 500. But lately, they've done okay. I mean, they're pretty much matching or slightly beating the S&P 500. I think my big issue is the valuation, okay? I cannot make a case for IBM over the next 5 years unless there's some kind of drastic change, something new that comes along.
Well, the thing that they have going for them is that they have such a large base of customers.
They have a lot of recurring revenue, right, in the services business.
They do. They have a lot of recurring revenue, and they have a lot of folks that just say, you know what, IBM, what do you have for me in this area? You guys are my trusted partner. I'm going to buy it from you.
Yes.
And a lot of those people that are making those buying decisions for those companies are people like IBM that have been in the business for many, many years.
Yes.
And they're not as forward-thinking.
Right,
the forward-thinking executives that are making the acquisitions, they're looking at the new technologies, and that's where IBM doesn't have a chance.
No, and you know, while I look at the track record of companies, yeah, that's looking in the rearview mirror. That's the past. I mean, what's important to an investor is what do the next 5 years look like?
Yep.
And I can just tell you that the consensus estimate on the street for their five-year growth, compound annual growth, is 5% a year, okay? So you take next year's earnings estimates and compound that out by 5% per year, that's about what the target price works out to be. I have 39% upside potential over the next 5 years, which is what, 6 or 7% per year? And that's a value grade of F. Now, having said that, if somebody transfers a portfolio to me from Fisher or from Morgan Stanley or Raymond James or Merrill Lynch or any number of the big wirehouse firms, it's almost always, always going to have IBM in it. It's considered a blue chip. I talked to somebody in the industry about why does Wall Street do this, and he came up with the same conclusion that I basically have, is they don't want risk. They don't want liability. And if somebody sues them because their portfolio went down and they take it to arbitration, they could claim, well, we had you in these blue chip stocks, the bluest of the blue. Didn't they call IBM even Big Blue?
Big Blue, yep.
And they're not going to win in an arbitration case that you put me into unsuitable stocks. So you give up a lot. Think of the opportunity cost that they give up by going back to that standard that it has to be a great big blue chip that you could defend in court if anybody ever sued you. I mean, just think of the upside. Just think of how the customer is hurt by that opportunity cost. That's just my perspective on that whole thing. We don't know. I've got 25 spots in my premier growth roster, and IBM would not be one of those taking up room on my bench.
They might make the old-timers game, Bill.
Yes, yeah, the old-timers, exactly. Okay, well, we're out of time to get a four-week trial to the best that we've got available to you. It's fresh every day out of the oven. 855-611-BEST or GundersonCapital.com to set up an appointment with us about our fee-based money management and the portfolios that we mix and match for you. Go to GundersonCapital.com or call us at 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.